Hello, this is the BBC World Service with a new documentary series, Egypt's Challenge. I'm Shaima Khalil. Welcome to my hometown, Alexandria, on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. There's a saying here in Egypt that Alexandria is the mermaid of the Mediterranean, Arus al-Bahr al-Mutawassit, as we say in Arabic. And three young girls are splashing around in the Mediterranean. They're not mermaids. They're quite young and excited to be swimming on a crisp morning here in downtown. And when you can't see, you can smell in Alexandria. The air smells so different. Oh look, she's trying to go down now. I just said, oh, I envy you. I want to join you. It's been 2 years after former President Hosni Mubarak was toppled and Egypt is on the brink. An economy in crisis and political turmoil. The last time I lived here was in the mid-90s. And now I've come back as a BBC reporter to see what a post-revolution Alexandria looks like. I mean, just sitting here by the sea brings back so many memories of my childhood. See, this is it. You can't resist the sea.
In this BBC series, I'll be exploring the challenges my country faces as a result of that historic revolution of January 25th, 2011. And in this first program, I return to my hometown, the mermaid of the Mediterranean, Egypt's second city, Iskenderiya, or Alexandria.
I used to come here in the tram, my favorite means of transport in Alexandria.
Mahattat al-Raml is the main district in downtown Alexandria, and a place where I have many fond memories growing up. Its name literally means sand station, as in old Alexandria days, anything beyond Mahattat al-Raml was a vast desert. There's been some change since then.
God, did I spend so many days and nights and hours on this tram. This was my favorite tram, number 2. And this is the ladies' carriage where I used to ride.
The ladies' carriage was where I always headed, for space and for safety. Public transport in Egypt is famous for being extremely overcrowded. And as part of the traditional segregation of men and women in Egypt's conservative society, the trams in Alexandria have a separate women's carriage. Sadly, in recent years, sexual harassment has increased alarmingly, and it's been particularly prevalent on public transport. So the separation keeps the women safe, at least on the trams. And back then, it also meant that my parents used to let me go out more, knowing that I was safe in the ladies' carriage.
This is all I need to tell me I'm in Alexandria, right here. I'm looking at 6 baskets of freshly caught fish and shrimps and crabs. And I'm speaking to Ahmed, and he told me he just caught them. And you could just smell the salty water on them. I mean, it's a fish smell, but it's a fresh fish smell. This reminds me of my grandmother's house, because I remember Fridays in my grandmother's house where my father and my uncle and my grandfather used to come with baskets just like this one, full of shrimp and squid and crabs. And the whole family used to gather, and my grandmother would have this huge pot where she'd cook the crab, and the whole house, the whole neighborhood would smell of freshly cooked crab.
Oh, gosh, it's exactly the same, exactly the same.
We've just arrived in Ibrahimiyya, the older part of Alexandria. I am in the street where my grandmother's house is. There's so many memories. I'm just looking at this basket. This is my grandmother's shopping basket. Basically, it's tied to a rope, and she would lower it. And she would shout out and tell the shopkeepers what she needs, and they just put it in that basket. But also, this is where my late grandfather used to stand and keep an eye out for us, because this is exactly where I played, just right here. And that's the building. This window used to scare me in the dark.
I haven't seen you for ages. You've grown tall.
Let's go speak to my grandmother. My grandmother, or Haggaiya, as all her grandchildren call her, is the true heart of my family and one of the strongest women I know.
She's in her 80s and still full of life. She keeps up to date with all the latest political events and loves her soap operas. She never went to school, and all her life, she was adamant that her children and her grandchildren get the best education.
I want to get a sense from you, because, you know, this is home. Right here, I feel very safe and I feel very grounded. Tell me how things have changed in Alexandria in the past 2 years.
كنا بنسمع بقى الناس يقولوا بره في الشارع اللي بره شارع لقيتي الحته اللي زي دي
شارع لقيتي كان في ضرب
سيدي جابر
معقول
My
grandmother is saying that just outside at the main street there were many clashes and she used to hear them
اسكندريه ما فيهاش امان ابدا
My auntie says there's no security so much conflict so much fighting
مشاكل كتير يعني الناس ماتت كتير اول بتشوف وناس صعبه طبعا انت لو تشوفي الامهات اللي اولادها ميته
انت حاسه كويس
لا
ليه
بيني وبينك انا مش حاسه كويس
I asked my grandmother what she thinks of what's been happening in Alexandria and in Egypt and she's not happy she says I don't think what's happening is good at all I think that Since President Morsi took power, there have been problems. So many people died. She says, if you see the mothers of those young people who died, you'll feel very sorry for them.
الإخوان دلوقتي هم بيتجهوا للناس الفقراء أكتر من أي حتة تانية. يعني هم لو أنت نزلت العشوائيات هتلاقيهم إزاي بيصرفوا عليهم وإزاي بيعملوا.
But not everyone is against them. Aunt Nadia is saying that because she works in charities, she goes into the poorer areas, the slums. And she sees how the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic movements manipulate the poor, saying that the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to take revenge, to avenge themselves from society because they've never been accepted, they were always in prison. And I'm challenging that. I'm saying no, because they have many followers, thousands and thousands and thousands of followers. So basically what she's saying is that they target the poor.
I had hope. I thought that they suffered a lot and they had so much trouble with the previous regime. They will be smarter than this. They're going to manipulate us, I know, but not in this very brutal and very exposed way because they turned everyone against them.
But you voted for him. You voted,
unfortunately, I did.
We always called my cousin Heba the brains of the family. And she's now a well-established businesswoman, running her own preschool and helping her husband with his pharmacy business. She had high hopes for the president.
Everyone supported him, everyone, including all the revolutionary powers and all the youth and everyone supported him. So when he makes the right decisions, people support him, even when they are not from the Muslim Brotherhoods. I don't know why did he drift away from this path. I guess this is because he wants to empower the Muslim Brotherhoods. It's about their own benefits, not about Egypt's benefits. This is the turning point for us. You know, there is a nickname for those who voted for Morsi, the lemon squeezers, that we squeeze lemon over things that we don't like their taste. We are the lemon squeezers. I am one of them.
After seeing my family, I went back into town to Mhattat al-Raml. And had a surprise encounter with two conservative Muslim women, covered from head to toe. They just got off the ladies' carriage themselves and started to talk to me straight away.
Madiha and Shadia are two seemingly young women. I know they're young because I can see their eyes and I can hear their voices, but I can't see their faces because they have their faces covered. They're wearing a niqab. And Madiha's carrying her baby, Genna. And I can see Genna's face, and it's a beautiful face.
Oh.
Where did you live in Alexandria?
Ashway.
She says it's one of the slums. Basically, they're saying that life has become a lot harder. No jobs, and their income has gone down quite a bit. Shadia is saying that her husband is now, he's lost his job. And he hasn't had a job for 2 months now, and there's no income. في الانتخابات انتخبتوا مين؟
انتخبنا حزب النور.
وليه انتخبتوه؟
احنا قلنا حزب القرآن.
مديحه and Shadia are saying that they voted for Mohamed Morsi in the presidential elections because he's a good Muslim and he knows Quran. عشان مسلمين.
مسلمين. مش هيسرق مش هيغش.
They voted for Islam. Is there a big Salafi presence where you live? وجود سلفي؟ في وجود سلفي؟
في.
She says there's a big Salafi presence where they live, and they give a lot of food staples like sugar, like oil, things that we need in our household. Madiha and Shadia are saying there isn't much police presence in their area. Many robberies and lots of thugs in their area, and police are not doing anything to stop it.
As I was speaking to Shadia and Nadiha, another woman approached us, Nergis. She looked quite angry and was really suspicious of my producer Daniel. She told me she thought he might be Israeli. But when I reassured her that I myself was from Alexandria, her reaction changed completely. She opened up and said that she was just fed up with the Islamists in power. She said that what they were doing had nothing to do with Islam. And as a sign of her rejection of the Muslim Brotherhood government, she's taken her veil or niqab off her face. I just haven't heard anything like this before. I never expected Shadia or Madiha to be so forthcoming and feel so free to speak to me. They all voted for President Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood, and all felt let down. The Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafists, both religious parties, were forced underground during the 30-year rule of former President Hosni Mubarak. When the government saw that they were gaining ground, they cracked down on them and threw their leaders into prison. Egypt's current president, Mohamed Morsi, was among those leaders. He's now in power, democratically elected, but as we've been hearing, increasingly unpopular here in Alexandria. People are saying that all the years of grassroots work and social welfare programs was and still is just a way of them buying people's votes with charity handouts. People here in Egypt call them the oil and sugar votes. I wanted to put these concerns to the government. Mohamed Sudan is a senior figure in the Muslim Brotherhood's Freedom and Justice Party and their spokesperson in Alexandria. Mr. Mohamed Sudan, you are a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and I've spoken to many people from different walks of life. They say the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamist movements are quite good at going to rural areas and poor areas and giving people services to get them to vote for them.
That's fine. Then this is the majority. This is democracy.
Yeah, but the argument is it's not about the majority. The argument is that they vote for you because you provide services for them.
Then let the others provide more services. They are much more rich than us. Then they can provide oil and the sugar and meat too. And then they will win the race. Let them do it. Do the same. It's a race. Don't blame the Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafist people that they provide the poor people what they need. Blame yourself why you don't do the same. And you are more rich than the Muslim Brotherhood. Go and do it, and we will see the results.
This was the most candid response I've ever heard from a Muslim Brotherhood official. We'll be hearing from him throughout this series, Egypt's Challenge, on the BBC World Service. The Muslim Brotherhood may be in government, but it's the ultra-conservative Salafi movement that has seen huge gains in popular support over the past 2 years. In the first parliamentary elections after the revolution, Salafis got the second biggest number of seats after the Muslim Brotherhood. Ahmed Atiya, an Alexandrian friend of mine, is an investigative journalist who has been reporting on the rise of the Salafi movement. He offered to take me to a poor area of town called Bakus, where the Salafis have their origins.
So Ahmed, I haven't been to this part of Bakus ever in my life. Tell me where we are in Bakus.
We are right near to Al Furqan School, which is also called Nur al-Islam Mosque. It's a huge mosque, as you can see, huge building, a huge complex. It was built in the late 80s, and it was the center of the first ever school for the Salafi movement.
It's not just a school, it's a whole complex. It's taken over the whole street. Hasn't it?
Yes. If you go here in the morning, they're just going to hear very loud voices of small children reciting Quran collectively.
And there are banners all over the outside walls of this school asking for donations to the Salafi movement and to the mosque. So basically this is the heartland of the Salafi movement in Alexandria, in Egypt. Is it fair to call the Salafis an ultra-conservative form of Islam?
I think it's fair, and one thing it did when it appeared is totally changed the spectrum of politics. So back in the 90s, we considered a Muslim Brotherhood as the far right.
Yes.
But now, the Muslim Brotherhood are actually the middle of the political spectrum.
We have a new
because
far
the Salafi
right.
are the new far right.
Tell me very simply what Salafi means.
Well, the dictionary would tell you that the word Salafi means just the way of the grandfathers. But of course, in a more scientific sense, it means that they are following a specific school of thoughts that limits understanding Islam to the first 300 years after the Prophet's death. In the 80s and the 90s, of course, there was a rise in the Islamic militant groups and calls for jihad in Afghanistan and, you know, fighting communism and fighting the enemies of Allah around the world. And this is when a group of young Islamic university students here in Alexandria decided they are not going to follow the violent trends. And this is how it all formed, through education.
So basically there were two Salafi currents here in Alexandria, one that was more jihadi and violent and the other was more peaceful and educational, and we're standing outside one of those schools.
Yes, the first ever school.
We're approached by a group of young men, and of course the thing about it is that you get a microphone out and everybody approaches you and he gets suspicious of our producer, Daniel.
Of course, yes. Foreign faces are always looked up suspiciously since the revolution.
But because we're both Egyptian, you and I, Ahmed, I think that kind of calmed them down a little bit. An old gentleman just passed by and he said, I wish I could invite you to come in, but I can't. But maybe you could go to the women's section.
I was curious. I wanted to know what a Salafi mosque was like. And it was time for sunset prayers.
Okay. So I've just taken off my shoes and I'm going into the women's section. So three young ladies have just walked in the women's section of the mosque and now they're doing wudu, they're washing up to get ready for prayer. I'm always just marveling at this separation. I mean, and I'm wearing a headscarf and technically I can take it off and no one would see me because men are not allowed here. I was just outside this mosque in the street and there were men and women walking around, mixing. And now I'm just here in the women's section. It just feels isolating. Every women's section part of a mosque I go to, there are the speakers. And the reason for that is that when a sheikh is giving a lecture, of course, women are not allowed to mix with men. And so the speakers are there for the women to hear the sheikh's lecture, but of course not to see the sheikh. And if you have a question for the sheikh, you write it on a piece of paper, you pass it on with a child, and the child gives it to a man in the men's section, and he gives it to the sheikh. Or at least that's how it's worked for many mosques I've been to.
Listen to this. A ballet class for 4 and 5 year old girls. As an Alexandrian, this, to me, is the sound of my city, just as the sound of the call to prayer is. Alexandria has an ancient history of culture and arts, with a beautifully restored library and opera house, and many ballet schools like this one.
Yeah, the girls were so cute. They were so adorable and so into the little dances. They're getting ready for a performance in a couple of days, and so their teacher, Lucien, is telling them to concentrate.
For the last 2 years, nothing has changed that much. I mean, the school is still here, we still have the students coming. The only thing is that we're going through a very difficult financial time because the disruptions caused by the several demonstrations, it disrupts our activities because people cannot come. And I think it's important to keep existing because this is somehow the continuity, because it has been like this for a long time. So it's one of the things that make the charm of this city, and it would be really sad if this vanished.
And there are those in the city that fear that places like Lucien's ballet school could vanish, that the cultural and artistic tradition of Egypt might indeed be threatened.
This is White Street. This is the oldest street in the city and the oldest street in Egypt because it's 2,500 years ago.
Dr. Mahmoud Aboudouma is the managing director of Teatro, one of the theaters in downtown Alexandria.
My main fear is my freedom and the freedom of the people and the growth of the religious people, especially Muslim brothers and the Salafis. I don't know, but I have this feeling that they are against culture by nature. It's a religious fascism.
Have you yourself experienced anything that would tell you that they're against culture?
Not yet. I don't have anything yet. Of course, yeah, everybody knows here in Egypt that they have their own hidden agenda regarding this.
But you say that, yet we're standing in this theater, in Teatro, we've got young people sitting outside, sipping coffee. You know, just a minute ago we were listening to music. Nobody's preventing you from doing anything.
No, not yet. I have a Muslim brother's neighbor here. They are inside this mosque. And there is a harmony between us. When they pray, we stop the music. After they pray, we start the music again. But when they are in power and ruling the country, they will prevent me. They don't like to see women inside the passage, or they don't like the music.
The truth is, people went out and people voted for the Muslim Brotherhood. People voted for Salafis to be in parliament.
Yes, that's right, but it doesn't reflect the reality. I mean, we're measuring things according to the European rationalism. We are using the Western criteria in judging the Egyptian experience.
So you're saying that this democracy is a superficial democracy?
What we have here in Egypt? Yes, of course. It's a fake one. It's not real. For me, I mean, the beginning itself, it was false also. I mean, we should start with the constitution and then the election. We put the horse before the cart. So we started with the elections.
Dr. Mahmoud, what I'm picking from you is that you're using your liberal values to judge the Muslim Brotherhood and to judge the Salafis, but you're refusing those same liberal values and Western values to judge the democratic process in Egypt. Can I ask you something? If a liberal candidate won with the exact same percentage, would you say this is superficial?
I'll be less stressed, but I will say the same words.
Are you worried about Alexandria?
Yes. Yes, I'm worried about Alexandria.
And Dr. Abodoma is not alone. It seems that everyone I met in my hometown was worried. In addition to the chaos and lack of security, many people are afraid that Islamists have hijacked life here. Take the huge controversy over Egypt's new constitution. Those opposed to it said that it was written for the Islamists, not for Egypt. As it was being drawn up, the Coptic Church and many of the liberal parties withdrew from the process, as they objected to articles which related to freedom of speech and the representation of Christians and other minorities in Egypt. As a result, the constitution was written by an Islamist-dominated constituent assembly. Back to Mohammed Sudan of the Muslim Brotherhood.
I want to move on to something else about this polarization on the street. And many people say that they are worried about the identity of Egypt, because now they have a president who is from an Islamic movement, from the Muslim Brotherhood. They had a parliament that, you know, had a majority of Islamic parties, whether it's the Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafi Nur party. And people are saying, we're worried about this. What's your response?
Is the Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafis are Egyptian or coming from abroad?
They're Egyptian, but they have an Islamic background. It's not a secular background.
The Muslim Brotherhood is not an enemy for the Egyptian people. Why we are dividing the people belong to the Islamic movement and un-Islamic movement.
But we're not dividing the people. The reality of the matter is that the people are polarized, and you've seen this in many, many cases. You see it in the demonstrations in the street. You see it in the referendum on the constitution. I spoke to a group of young people, and it's always them and us. And the same from people who belong to the Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafi. They speak about the liberals and the opposition. There is a them and us mentality now. There's a polarization in the country.
This is not polarization, this is a politics. If you live in the United States, there one belongs to the Democratic Party and the other one belongs to the Republican Party. And politics is always clashing because we are in the first step in democracy. And we still live in the counter-revolution. And we still have 14 TV channels, 47 newspapers working day and night against the Islamist movement, against the new president, and against the new regime in Egypt. Let me tell you this. Now we have to go to the ballot boxes and see what is the result of the boxes. And this is the reality of the Egyptian people. I'm talking about the election. Finally, the democracy will talk.
My grandparents, do you remember this? My grandparents, every...
We have the 5 o'clock tea.
5 o'clock tea here.
And cookies and the cakes and everything.
And the ice cream in the summer.
It was very quiet and it was very friendly neighborhood. But now it changed. The area changed a lot, yeah. Now you can see the garbage everywhere. I don't know, maybe this is because of the population, because the number is more than it could stand. Yeah. This is a sign of corruption also, even before the revolution, but now this has got worse after the revolution. During the last 2 years, this is a lot worse. And even the army cannot apply the order. It might lead to civil war.
I hope not.
Civil war. I've heard that term from so many people, not just my cousin Heba. People in Egypt use it frequently now. Returning to my hometown Alexandria, there is a palpable sense of confusion and disappointment. But I also strongly felt a sense of empowerment. For the first time, people like the Niqabi women, Nergis, Nadiha, and Shadia, are questioning authority and voicing their anger about how the country is run. This was never allowed to happen under Mubarak. And if it did, of course, you would have been arrested and put in prison. But this newfound freedom starts to matter less when people don't even know where their next meal is coming from. Everyone is worried here. Whether I was speaking to a fish seller in the street or with my family in my grandmother's house, people are worried about security, about the deteriorating economy, and how it could affect not just day-to-day life, but a whole generation of young people struggling to find jobs. And of course, the ongoing debate about the Islamist movements and their rise to power in Egypt. I'll be looking at all these issues in the coming weeks. You've been listening to Egypt's Challenge with me, Shaima Khalil, and my producer, Daniel Tetlow. Next week, I'll be exploring what effect the revolution is having on freedom of expression. Don't miss Egypt's new star and political satirist, Bassem Youssef.